Chief Justice and then Chief Lindsey Clark presiding. Your silence is commanded.
All right, please be seated. Good morning. This morning we have Lakeshore Technical College and East Troy High School. Is that correct? Could I please have Lakeshore Technical College stand first? Nice to see you here today. Thank you for joining us. You can go ahead and have a seat. And East Troy High School. Good group. Between the two groups, this is a full court today, and it's nice to have all of you here. Today, go ahead and have a seat. If you have time to stay, Justice Rebecca Dallet will be meeting with you, and she won't talk about the cases we hear this morning, but she can answer any questions that you might have for her, and I hope you have some good ones because she's really smart and can help answer all those for you. The case we are hearing this morning is State versus Wilson Anderson, 20 AP 819 CR. Could I please have counsel's appearances? Morning. All right, good morning. I have the lineup 25 minutes followed by 30, 5 minutes in rebuttal. Okay, with that, let's proceed. Thank you.
May it please the court. Good morning. I'm David Susans here on behalf of Wilson Anderson.
I'm sorry. Justice Kroski is on the telephone this morning. She's appearing by phone. She is here and present and participating. Okay.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Anderson appeals an order allowing the government to forcibly medicate him with antipsychotic drugs to try to treat him to competency. As the state correctly concedes, the Circuit Court and the Court of Appeals erred by issuing and affirming the order without an individualized treatment plan, without testimony from a qualified expert, and without medically informed record required by Sell versus United States. Because the state's concessions are based on a panoply of federal cases interpreting Sell, this court should accept them and vacate the involuntary medication order. Along with vacating the medication order, this court should give circuit courts and the Court of Appeals concrete guidance for applying Sell's four-factor test. This court should hold that the state cannot meet its burden under Sell without an individualized treatment plan backed by evidence from a licensed physician.
Why does it have to be a licensed physician when there are other medical practitioners who can prescribe medication?
Sure, there are a few reasons for that. Primarily, Mr. Anderson, the amicus brief, all the federal cases, the Court of Appeals in State versus Green agree. This is a decision that has to be made based on a robust, medically informed record. It's a high stakes. Sell tasks courts with answering a legal question that's constitutionally required that has high stakes legal and medical consequences.
But counsel, like, I have a daughter who's in PA school. I know a lot of people have probably seen a PA. Last time I went to the doctor, I couldn't get in, so I saw the PA who prescribed me medication, who knows my record, who's... So, I'm afraid with what you're asking is going to cause us to say more than we need to say. So, why is it a licensed physician that you're asking for, and why do we need to say that at all? You're correct. There's a concession. There should be an individualized treatment plan, which we've already said, and it should be based on a robust record. Absolutely. Why do we need to take that extra step of saying who the person is who testifies?
Well, it's a step that the legislature has already taken. Everybody committed under 97114 is a patient for the purposes of the patient's rights provisions of Chapter 51. And in both 97114 5 a.m. and 5161 1G3, those provisions require a statement signed by a licensed physician and based on an examination by a licensed physician to show that a defendant needs medication and treatment and a defendant is not competent to refuse medication. If the question of whether an individual is incompetent to refuse medication requires the opinion of a doctor, and the legislature has said so, then taking this next step, making this highly consequential legal and medical decision about forced medication also should require evidence from a licensed. And we certainly acknowledge that doctors aren't the only people who can prescribe medication. And physician's assistants, other people can prescribe medication.
That's a reasonable policy argument. It makes sense, maybe, if the legislature do that, but it didn't do that here. You're asking us to impose something that might be prudent, but the statute doesn't require it. So what we're left with is, cell factors, and what's the minimum that's necessary. So are you arguing for... I mean, you're not arguing that the statute requires that, right? I didn't read your brief to say that.
Well, the statute requiring it is not the only reason. The language of cell itself, how the federal courts have interpreted cell, what the state federal courts, and we agree, is required of a treatment plan, the rationale behind that treatment plan requirement is essentially the same as the rationale for requiring testimony from a licensed physician. The court really needs particularized information about the specific medication, about the maximum dosage, about the duration of treatment. But also, that information has to be applied to the individual, applied to the individual's medical history, their medical condition, their pre-existing conditions. And cell, as cell explains in the third and fourth factor, and in particular the second and fourth factors, cell requires a determination that the medications are in the patient's best medical interest. And in part because the legislature has drawn a bright line and said that a licensed physician is required, we need doctors are the only ones who are able to look at that record and make that determination. And it's a clear-cut line that will allow courts to – will guide courts in making a decision about whether the expert who the state decides to call to testify about the cell factors is qualified.
Are you anchoring that argument in the statute, in the Constitution, due process? What's the anchor of the licensed physician argument?
The anchor is in due process. It's in the Constitution.
Let me then ask, if this is what due process requires, what about all of those prior and existing orders that once were in effect or that currently are in effect throughout the state that did not have the testimony of a licensed physician at the hearing? What happens to those? Are they vacated? Are they void ab initio? What's the consequence of your argument?
I guess they could be if they were relitigated. I guess it depends on the circumstances. Here in Mr. Anderson's case, his case has not been dismissed. He's been discharged from the commitment, but his criminal case is alive. So a decision vacating his particular commitment has consequences. That may not be the case for every individual who's been committed over the years. I don't know what the trickle-down effect of that would be.
I have two questions from Justice Krofsky. One of them is, You mentioned courts imposing the requirement that it must be a licensed physician. Which courts have done that?
Well, it's true, as the state points out, that CEL doesn't explicitly say you need testimony from a doctor. But part of the reason for that, I think it's clear from reading the cases, is that the testimony almost always does come from a doctor. So in Green, for instance...
From a practical perspective is what you're saying, then.
From a practical perspective, it hasn't come up. And in United States versus Chavez, the state where, or the case where the government did present testimony only from a psychologist, the court rejected that and specifically critiqued the government for not presenting testimony and evidence and a treatment plan that was developed by a psychiatrist. So it's more than just can there be, it's not a question of whether the state can call a psychologist to testify about the cell factors. It's more about whether that testimony alone is sufficient to meet the burden under CEL to establish a treatment plan.
Okay, and along those lines, why can't the circuit court be the gatekeeper with that expert testimony under 90702 like it is with all other testimony?
I think that the court, even if this court ruled that a licensed physician or some evidence from a licensed physician is required, the court still retains that gatekeeping function. The state, if they wanted to call a psychologist related to the to testify about involuntary medication, they would have the burden of convincing the circuit court that that testimony is admissible. So I think that court would retain that gatekeeping function. I think if without clear guidance, there could be a situation where all of a sudden we're having Daubert hearings to determine if a nurse practitioner or a psychologist is qualified to testify on the cell factors. If a person who is not the treating physician, a person who has not had firsthand knowledge of the individual's medical condition, who has not examined them, whether they have the training experience and personal knowledge required to testify. So it's a bright line rule, but it's a bright line rule that is appropriate constitutionally, fits within the existing language of 97114, fits within the existing procedural requirements of 97114, the procedural framework of 97114, and is necessary based on what CEL requires in terms of a treatment plan.
So your argument is there is no circumstance under which the state could marshal evidence without there being a licensed physician that due process could be satisfied. They could offer a variety of different pieces of expert testimony. They could have forensic psychologists. They could have a physician's assistant. They could have maybe an individualized treatment plan of some sort, but that still wouldn't be enough if it's not a licensed physician.
I think just to put a really fine point on things, there has to be some evidence that comes from a licensed physician, whether it be the development of the treatment plan, whether it be the testimony at the hearing. A licensed physician by nature, in particular psychiatrists, we know that they have the training experience to give this. And whether or not, again, someone can come into court who's not the licensed physician, who hasn't conducted the review of the records, who may or may not have training specific to the specific antipsychotic medication that's being proposed, whether that person can come in and testify about it is a question for the trial court through the evidence code.
Can anyone other than a licensed physician work with others or by themselves be credentialed enough to create an individualized treatment plan?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part.
Can an individualized treatment plan be made by created, designed by somebody who's not a licensed physician?
No. Just looking at what everyone agrees a treatment plan requires, categorically, licensed physicians are qualified to develop a treatment plan.
If you're right about that, then why is it so important that we need to say that? If there's agreement that an individualized treatment plan is necessary and you are factually correct that only a physician could do that, why is this such an important argument for us to say that? It seems like that would follow necessarily if you're correct on that.
It's important for this court to say it because circuit courts are struggling with Sell. Circuit courts are struggling to hold the state to the burden under Sell. And this court's guidance will help them do that. And I think, just to sort of circle back to the previous question, under the evidence code, if the treatment plan is developed by a doctor, if say there's been an examination by a licensed physician and the state wants to call a witness who's not that physician to come to court and testify, this court has held that that person can't merely act as a conduit for that information, for the opinions of others. There needs to be an opinion developed based on an independent review of the record.
Well, that, I think that's more nuanced than what you're advancing. Excuse me. I may be incorrect, but assume that you are correct that a licensed physician is needed, I'm just going to assume this, is needed for the treatment plan. Does it necessarily follow that only a licensed physician can testify and give opinions regarding the Sell factors at the hearing?
I think that would depend on the training and experience of the person who comes to testify. It would depend on their knowledge of the defendant and his medical history.
My question was, so is only a licensed physician, can only a licensed physician testify at trial? And I hear your answer. It depends. So the answer to my question, I think, is no, it's not only a licensed physician. It can be other experts that can be the ones that testify at trial rather than a licensed physician, depending on, and I'm now going to put, the gatekeeper function that the circuit court exercises. Are you in accord with that, or do you disagree with what I'm saying?
I think that, yes, it's possible for someone who's not a licensed physician to come to court to testify about it. And again, we're not looking...
As long as that there is a treatment plan, I heard you say, that is by a licensed physician. Am I wrong on that caveat or correct on that caveat?
Correct. I think the point is not simply that... It's not only about the testimony. It's about the treatment plan. It's about how that was developed, about how that's articulated. It's about all the details that are contained within the treatment plan. If by chance or for some, someone else is able to, within the rules of the evidence code, come to court and testify about that who's not a licensed physician, I suppose that could be sufficient. I think as a practical matter, why not have the doctor come to testify about it? Why not have someone that we know is qualified, that we know has the training and experience to, and the firsthand knowledge of the patient to come to court and explain to the court why it's constitutionally permissible and medically appropriate specifically to take this extreme measure of forcibly medicating someone with a mind-altering substance. So I think that's a long-winded way of saying, yes, I think it's possible, but certainly not that testimony alone is not enough. There needs to be evidence, some sort of evidence, from the licensed physician to support the treatment plan.
And that evidence, can that evidence then be a treatment record, treatment plan, excuse me, in the record, upon which a non-licensed physician qualified by the court can testify?
I think under Teresa B., it would be difficult for the state to bring someone in that's not simply acting as a conduit for that opinion, who has the independent training experience and knowledge of the patient to be able to answer the court's questions, to be subjected to the patient's attorney's cross-examination, to be able to fully develop a robust record for the court to make the decision.
I'll go back to physician assistants. That's what they do. I mean, they work under doctors. They can't have their own practice separate and apart. They have to be affiliated with a doctor's office. But going back to my example of my doctor, I've seen my physician assistant more in this specialty area than I've seen the doctor. So, like, to me, I mean, so you're asking us, again, for something very narrow to say it has to be a licensed physician. Is that really what you want us to say? And you want us to shut out an entire body of potential experts? And why?
And again, we're not asking the court to hold that only a licensed physician can come to testify about the cell factors. What we're saying is that there needs to be some evidence from a licensed physician. And you know, as an example, in this case in particular, it's a psychologist. It's not a physician assistant or a nurse practitioner. But as you said, nurse practitioners work closely with doctors. Presumably, there would be a doctor involved in that process. I don't know specifically how, in cases like this, Mendota handles things, whether nurse practitioners are working closely with the patient. But I do know that there are treating psychiatrists who are working with the patient. And as a practical matter, the treatment plan is going to be and should be developed by the treating psychiatrist.
Well, what do you want? Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Do you know how few psychiatrists there are in rural Wisconsin? I mean, in some places it is virtually non-existent. So how does that interface with your own?
Well, I think the procedural aspects of 97114 allow time if involuntary medication is absolutely needed. There's a procedure built in the statute for an individual to be committed based on the opinion of a psychologist, based on the examiner, to be offered treatment, to be potentially sent to Mendota for that treatment, to be evaluated by a psychiatrist who's there at Mendota already, and to come back to court to justify why involuntary medication is required. This is not a radical, from a procedural perspective and from the language of the statute, it's not a radical requirement. The statute already requires the opinion of a licensed physician. The individual will have been committed, and the statute allows for time to make sure that involuntary medication is necessary and to develop the medically informed record that the court needs to make this really high-stakes legal decision that has huge medical consequences.
So what's the holding you would have us give if you had your if we decided in your favor? What would it say?
It would say that The state cannot meet its burden under CEL without an individualized treatment plan backed by evidence from a licensed physician.
You wouldn't have it be specific to testimony.
No, not necessarily. I agree that there are some circumstances where someone besides a doctor could come to court and testify, but I think those circumstances would be few and far between, and I think the rule that we're proposing would provide enough guidance to the circuit courts, to prosecutors, to the Department of Health Services, to make sure that they have someone come to court and testify with enough knowledge and training and experience to meet their burden. And ultimately, it's the state's burden. The state is going to choose who they decide to call as a witness, and the court's still able to act as a gatekeeper to determine whether that testimony is admissible, and based on that testimony, to determine whether the state has met its burden under the CEL factors. So it's a workable rule procedurally. It's consistent with the line that the legislature has already drawn with respect to competency to refuse medication. And it's a rule that is consistent with what everybody agrees a treatment plan requires. And unless there are other questions, I think my time is almost up.
There are other issues. Standard of review, is that an issue? Well, I guess I'll find out when you get up and argue again, since your light is on.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. I think it would be helpful this morning if I start out by saying from our perspective where we think the parties agree and where we think the daylight is in this case. We agree that to meet its burden under the CEL test, the state has to provide the circuit court with a reliable, medically informed record that has to be based in part on an evaluation of the defendant's medical history. We agree with Mr. Anderson that this individualized treatment plan requirement is fairly implied from CEL's four-factor test. For example, how can you decide whether forced medication is medically appropriate if we haven't identified what the medication is and the defendant's health profile? So we join Mr. Anderson today in asking this court to affirm the individualized treatment plan requirement for CEL cases, and we're happy with Green's description of what that plan generally needs to cover. Where I think the daylight is between the parties in this case is that we disagree with the notion that the only way to provide a reliable, medically informed record that CEL calls for is through the use of a licensed physician. CEL, as Mr. Anderson recognizes, CEL doesn't say that. CEL does not say that for the government to meet its four-factor test, it needs to produce evidence from a licensed physician. The only thing the opinion says is that it gives a single reference to medical experts. Nor do we think that this licensed physician requirement is implied in CEL's four-factor test. And the reason why is what we've already been touching on this morning. I think the gut reaction in terms of, well, of course you have to use a licensed physician, is this idea that licensed physicians are capable of prescribing medication and they're capable of assessing a defendant's medical history and condition and the interaction between the proposed drug regimen and the defendant's health profile. But as we've been discussing here this morning, other medical professionals are fully capable of making those decisions.
Your setup would require the circuit court to hear someone coming in saying they're a nurse practitioner or something other than a licensed physician, and then the circuit court is going to have to decide, is this person competent to make the decision about the interactions of drugs, to make the decisions about the effect of the prescribed drug on this particular person? So how is the circuit court going to have that kind of background to make that kind of a decision, where if we have a licensed physician, we know their medical training involves all of that? How are we going to do it for, say, a nurse practitioner?
Well, the legislature has already spoken on this and has recognized that there are other medical professionals in Wisconsin.
No. The legislature doesn't set the terms of what evidence can come in. We're looking at satisfying self, right?
Yep.
The circuit court has got to determine whether the person the state sends in is qualified to satisfy cell. And you're saying it doesn't have to be a medical physician. And I'm saying to you, well, if I buy your argument, how does the circuit court determine whether the person who is here today is one of those persons who can satisfy cell?
I mean,
drug interactions are tremendously complicated. And they're different depending on different people. So how is the circuit court going to sort that all out?
Well, I think if it's an individual that the legislature has recognized has the capability of prescribing medication and has the capability of...
Just the ability to prescribe medication doesn't give you the ability to determine the effect of all medications on a particular person who's going to be getting them.
We certainly acknowledge that it needs to be somebody who is capable of prescribing whatever drugs are recommended for the treatment for the defendant.
I understand your good faith in presenting that. My problem is I'm thinking of the circuit court sitting there, because the circuit court is going to be the gatekeeper. And how is the circuit court going to determine whether this particular witness can satisfy medically what is going to happen and what is needed for the person who's subject to the potential commitment?
I think they need to develop a record and listen to what the individual's qualifications are, what their experience is. I'm not sure I understand why, under Mr. Anderson's proposed rule, we would be saying that a urologist is qualified to write an individualized treatment plan and come into court and testify because they're allowed.
I doubt that he's thinking of a urologist.
Well, it's a licensed physician, whereas whereas a physician's assistant who specializes in psychiatry and works hand-in-hand with a licensed physician wouldn't be qualified to come in and give that information to the circuit court. I think what's important, and Justice Rogenczak, you're touching on it, the end goal here is to provide the circuit court with helpful information to make what is admittedly a very important and technical decision. But our position is, because the legislature in our state has recognized that there are other medical professionals outside of licensed physicians who are capable of determining whether a particular drug, after assessing the defendant's health, will be safe for that defendant, all we're saying is we'd like some flexibility in being able to prove our case.
How does this fit into 90702 generally and what circuit courts do when evaluating expert witnesses, your argument?
I think the circuit court should just be, the state will call its witness, and the circuit court will listen to the witness's qualifications and make a decision whether they have specialized knowledge, education, training, skill necessary to testify on the subject matter. This is a routine decision for circuit courts, and as far as the testimony goes, we're just asking that this court doesn't about who can testify at these hearings.
It sounds to me like you're asking for a rather blanket rule, which makes me a little nervous until I know more about it. But your blanket rule, I think, is anyone who's licensed medically, is that your blanket rule?
No, I think the rule here is let's just follow Cell. We agree that Cell sets the standard for when it's constitutional to involuntarily medicate someone. They set forth a four-factor test. And we agree that it is implied from that four-factor test that we have to produce this individualized treatment plan, which calls for particularized information about the individual and about the medication. We're on board with that.
Okay.
But
would a nurse practitioner right out of school with no specific training in psychiatry, would that person be sufficient to develop a treatment plan? I'm looking for categories now.
Sure.
Nurse practitioner.
Well, again, I don't think that there should be any categorical rule coming out of this case. I think the circuit court should be able to determine that based on the person's qualifications.
We can't have helter-skelter. I mean, you know, is this going to work? I don't know.
Well,
what's the circuit court going to do? I don't know. We'll have a gatekeeper function. I mean, we need rules that can be applied fairly with the backdrop of we're dealing with a very important issue here.
Agreed.
Deprivation of liberty.
Agreed. Right? And I'm just going to push back on it a little bit because the U.S. Supreme Court, had they felt the need to say a licensed physician absolutely needs to be involved in this process or the government can't meet its burden, it very easily could have said that, and it didn't.
Help me with this. I know that South Court said a medically informed record. That was the phrase. But there was one other point where, did they say medical expert? They used one.
The opinion for sure calls for expert opinion. We're not disputing that.
But
the only other reference I saw is one reference to medical experts,
okay,
which obviously must be a licensed physician. So really, at bottom, what our position is today is because we don't think the U.S. Supreme Court has found it necessary to micromanage the government and circuit courts at cell hearings in this fashion, we don't think this short court should be doing it either. I also want to address the suggestion that our legislature has somehow spoken on this issue. It hasn't. 97114, as this court recognized in Fitzgerald, doesn't cover the cell standard. That's kind of the whole problem here, why we're having a lot of difficulty with this standard. The 97114 addresses a different standard for involuntary medication. So we acknowledge the language in sub 5 AM that calls for a licensed physician, but again, that is to meet a completely different standard than the cell standard. So I just want it to be clear that this court shouldn't be saying that if you do say that we have to use a licensed physician, it's because the legislature has already spoken on this. It has not spoken on it.
Counsel, just as I understand your argument, I just want to make sure that the legislature hasn't spoken, the Supreme Court hasn't said any particular kind of, credentialed professional is necessary in a certain situation. So we're kind of left, and the legislature could clarify this area, and there certainly have been calls for them to do so since our decision in Fitzgerald. And what you're just saying is the trial court does what the trial court normally does, is be the gatekeeper, find somebody who's competent and qualified, follow the statutory standard for expert evidence, and, maybe specific issues will arising from that until and unless the legislature gives more specificity. But I think your argument is just that's what the legislature's given us. We shouldn't be creating new rules, even if they're prudential, even if they might be wise rules, because we don't have any legal authority upon which to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this court's decision in Stevenson a few years ago, I think the analysis should run very similarly. That was a situation where the defense argued that the state has to use an expert witness in Chapter 980 trials to prove dangerousness. And this court's analysis was very simply, the statute doesn't call for the use of an expert witness. We're not going to require the state to use one. They may have a stronger case where they do, but that goes to the weight of the evidence. And so similarly here, we may have a stronger case if we use a licensed physician, although I don't necessarily agree with that because of the point I made about bringing in any kind of licensed physician. And Mr. Anderson and other defendants, they have a right to argue against the weight of our evidence at a hearing. The other thing I want to point out is this statute does give defendants the right to bring in their own examiner, which could include a licensed physician. So they have every right during these competency proceedings to bring in their own examiner, and they can bring them to the hearing and try to counter the state's evidence in that way. So that is another way to solve this concern about whether we're involving a licensed physician or not.
I read your brief a bit ago, but my recollection of it was please, oh pretty please, answer this case narrowly. pretty please, how's that?
I think that's fair.
Is that a correct interpretation of your... So there are lots of other issues that are here. Preclusion, if I recall, the standard of review is an issue, preclusion maybe not. But so the narrows, what are you advancing? Since you said please do it narrowly.
Sure.
What are you advancing?
I think the narrowest decision would just be to say cell calls for an individualized treatment plan requirement for the state to meet its burden, affirm what the Court of Appeals in Green has said about that plan, and then end the analysis. We didn't do that here, so Mr. Anderson is entitled to relief. I think that's the narrowest grounds to decide this case. And, you know, and to your point, I do think, like, in terms of this being a good vehicle to decide this licensed physician issue, I really don't think that it is, because this isn't a case where we pro-offered an individualized treatment plan and we're arguing over whether the government met their burden by clear and convincing evidence based on who was involved in writing that plan or who testified in court, where you'd have a record to be able to consider the person, the non-licensed physician's qualifications. So that's another reason why we did suggest that this should just be decided on the narrowest possible grounds.
Justice Kroski wants to know if we could decide this on summary reversal and accomplish the same thing.
Yes, I think you could. The one thing I would say is I do think it's a little concerning here that the Court of Appeals in this case didn't follow Green, especially when Mr. Anderson filed a motion to reconsider pointing out the individualized treatment plan requirement. So for that reason, you know, I do think it is fair for this court to weigh in and at least make clear that, yeah, you've got to follow that treatment plan requirement in these cases.
But you think we need to reiterate Green because maybe circuit courts don't get it?
I don't think you have to. I would be fine with a summary Justice Dowd and Justice Kroski.
You're not asking us to do anything different than Green. I mean, if we reversed and said, you know, Green says this, nobody's arguing that we change or modify it, overrule that in any way.
That's true.
End of story, right?
That's true.
Because you're just saying, say what Green says.
We already had Green, and we still got ourselves twisted around in this case, correct? I mean, nobody's comfortable with what the record looked like at the circuit court, not the state and not the defendant's counsel. So it seems to me to do a summary reversal is the court saying, oh, well, we won't cause any problems, but we won't give any assistance to the circuit court either.
I think there are good arguments either way for issuing an opinion or a summary reversal. And I understand the court's frustration with why, you know, we're really not getting this right in the lower courts despite this court's guidance.
Correct.
And really, the legislature needs to weigh in on this.
I would like you to try to articulate for me the criteria for a person who could testify as to the drug's effects on the individualized person who will be before the court as a potential committee. Describe for me how you would think such a person who would be competent to testify would look like? What kind of criteria should we be telling the circuit court to look for?
Well, so again, I'm pushing back on the idea that we should be giving that specific type of instruction to
know,
the gatekeepers
on this.
But
obviously, I clearly feel the other way.
I don't think you're going to like my answer because I think I've given it previously. But okay. I think it should be somebody who is capable under Wisconsin law of prescribing the particular medications that are being recommended, and somebody who is capable of assessing the defendant's medical history and condition and the interaction between the proposed drug regimen, the drugs at issue, and the defendant's health profile. I think in that situation, I think circuit courts would be well within their discretion to admit that testimony, and I think that would help us prove our clear and convincing burden of proof in these cases.
Okay, that was a good narration. Thank you.
If there are no further questions, thank you.
Well, just before you sit down, you had time. This will be quick, then. I mean, what about those other issues? You know, some people don't even think these issues exist.
So I think you're referring...
I'm speaking with just to one of my colleagues. But the standard of review, do you want to weigh in on that? Maybe you don't care enough about it.
Well,
you wrote about it, but you know...
We're going to lose either way under either standard of review. As we noted, the majority of the federal circuits that have addressed the standard of review have said the first factor is a legal question, whether you have an important governmental interest, and the other three are reviewed for clear error. They're factual questions. We think that's appropriate. Again, Mr. Anderson, I know, is suggesting a different standard of review, but that the cases that he cited, I don't think, believe have anything to do with Sell.
In part, this comes under your pretty please approach, and I think it was pretty please, no need to get to that issue, right?
Correct. Yeah, I mean, I think you could wait for the right vehicle where it may matter what the standard of review is. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I think just to start right away with the standard of review, we agree with the standard that the Court of Appeals adopted. This is an issue that deals with due process. We've all recognized the gravity of this question. We've all recognized the struggle that circuit courts have had with the cell standard. So because there's such an important liberty interest at stake here, this court, if it's going to get into the question of the standard review, and again, I think it's pretty clear that that this court should vacate the medication order under any standard. This court, if it's going to do it, should adopt the standard that we use in other cases involving due process, in other cases involving mental health commitments, involving that deprivation of liberty that results from a commitment.
In the Court of Appeals in this case, are there other courts around the country that have adopted the standard of review that you're arguing for here?
Well, this court has, not in this context, but for instance, on the question of dangerousness and the question of involuntary medication under Chapter 51, this court says that that is a mixed question of law and fact, and we're going to defer to the circuit court's fact-finding, but we're going to review de novo whether those facts meet the legal standard.
Sure. What about in this context, though, because this is obviously nationwide, so courts around the country have been using and applying cell. Are you aware of any other courts that, in the context of application of cell, use what you're advocating?
I don't know, but I do know that the federal courts are not unanimous in the standard of review that they've adopted. They've not unanimously held that the first factor is a legal question and the others are just factual questions. But I'm not aware. I can't cite a particular case for you. A couple other points that I wanted to touch on. With respect to summary reversal, no, thank you. I think that would do a disservice to circuit courts, to courts of appeals, to our clients who are in a position to be forcibly medicated. This is too important of an issue for the court not to speak on it. And I think with Fitzgerald, we've tried the just follow cell approach, and 3+ years later, it's clear that that's not enough. We need guidance on this issue, so we don't want summary reversal.
Is there anything that Green says regarding an individual treatment plan that you, individualized treatment plan, that you disagree with or would want us to say something more or different than?
No, I think Green does a great job of filtering through the federal cases, looking at how the treatment plan is unanimously been adopted in federal courts and describing what needs to be in a treatment plan. The difference between this case and Green and this case and Sell and this case and virtually every other published decision that's out there is that in Green we had testimony from a psychiatrist, we had testimony from a licensed physician, same with Sell, and so the court in those cases wasn't tasked with answering the question of whether there has to be evidence from a licensed physician. We're asking the court to adopt that rule here, and I think based on some of the back and forth this morning, I think the cleanest rule that this court could adopt is to hold that the state must present testimony from the patient's treating psychiatrist. We've not asked the court to find that, but I think, as Justice Rogensack has alluded to, that's the clean question that would not put circuit courts in the difficult position of conducting a Daubert hearing every time the state tries to present testimony.
So the court orders the defendant's physician to come testify in court. That's what you're asking?
Asking for I'm saying what the cleanest
to
rule would be.
How that works. And
yeah.
The order deals with the court's ability to order DHS to come testify.
Yeah.
The defendant can have the defendant's physician come testify. But your
sure.
ask is that the court order the defendant's physician
to come testify?
I think from a practical perspective, the treating physician is a DHS employee at Mendota who is examining the individual and coming up with the treatment plan. On the ground, I think that's what would happen. I see my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you for interesting oral argument. The court will adjourn. We will reconvene for the second oral argument this morning, and counsel are in their positions.